This meeting follows a speaker format on the first Saturday of the month, and this means that I will share my story for 15 minutes, describing what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. And I did bring some pictures. The first one was taken at my friend Elizabeth's second birthday. I think I'm really too big to be one. Well, you never know. But I'm putting food in my mouth. Okay, my name's Chris, and I am a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. What happened, what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I made some notes Thursday. It may be what I need to say today, and it may only be what I needed to say on Thursday to myself, because yesterday I had to put the cat down, and it was going to be a hard day. So what I believe and know to be true for me is that, A, I'm a sugar addict and could not manage my own weight loss or maintenance or my eating by myself. B, that no other person, diet, or method was able to relieve my compulsive overeating. And C, that God through OA could and continues to do so. And four, it's not about me. So, number one, what it was like, my lowest weight in my whole life was 9 pounds, 10 ounces. And that is considered big for your age. So, I started that way and just went up. I'm never going to have been one of those skinny babies. My father was an alcoholic. My mother was in the generation with a grandfather who's an alcoholic, and then nobody's an alcoholic, and then you either are an alcoholic or you marry an alcoholic, and that's what she and her brothers did. And then the children all had manifestations of weirdness. And a few of us made it. So we were in South Dakota. It was 1949. The family business is a bakery. And I was a formula baby, which back then was Karo syrup and God knows what. So I have been mainlining sugar from day one, and a lot of anything can be addictive and too much. The baby was fed because Dad needed to sleep because he worked nights. He was a baker. And every cry was answered with a bottle, or so I'm told. So I didn't differentiate between how you respond to dirty diapers or fears or just, you know, or anything. The answer was always the same. It was sugar water. And that worked for me for 29 years. We, you know, we ate recreationally. We ate for livelihood. It's what's paid the bills. We had a food business. That didn't make me a compulsive overeater, but I was. I have the genetics of an alcoholic. And I was a chubby child. I graduated to chubette. You know, that was a department at Lane Bryant, I think, actually. And when my dad died, I was 7 years old, and now they would say this child was depressed. But then they just, it's like, oh, they'll get over it. And I sat in front of the TV, and I watched cartoons and ate. Baked goods, obviously. More than anything in the world, I wanted to be able to have stuff like the other kids did, which would be the crappy baked goods that you buy at a convenience store. We had great baked goods, and I just wanted to host a snowball because they were like that big on Howdy Doody, and they'd take it apart, and they'd show you, you know. And couldn't have that. I had to have good stuff, and I had a lot of it. So I didn't fit. By the time I was 11, I didn't fit anywhere. I was 205 pounds. Hadn't reached my adult height. I didn't fit in cute kids' desks at school. They'd have to get in a bigger one. I didn't fit in normal clothes in stores. You couldn't buy big clothes in stores in those days. Navy blue A-line dresses. I really hate navy blue A-line dresses. Although I wore a really, really, really cute one last night dancing. But it was a better size than what I used to wear. Let's just put it that way. People try to be nice when you're a fat kid. They try not to notice you. They tried, but somebody would always say something. So I knew I was fat from day one because of what people would say. And children are cruel and things like that. I became the elephant in my family's living room. Nobody really talked about it. The disease, they danced around it. They tried to think I'd outgrow it, or I don't know what we thought would happen. But what we tried, and I say what we tried, because I didn't have the seventh tradition in my life then. What we tried, it was always all about, what are you going to do about my problem? What are we going to do about Christine? We're going to take her to doctors. We're going to give her pills. You know, don't let me eat those cookies. I mean, this went all the way up until when I was married. You know, I'm baking. I'm putting it in the freezer. Don't you dare let me have one. We're going to a party. Don't let me eat. I mean, it was always, always not taking responsibility for myself. And then I had somebody to blame. And so what we tried were diet pills. I found a picture the other day of the lady in the pink bikini. She lived on my refrigerator for years to shame me into dieting. And she was blonde. I was going to be blonde, too, when I got to be thin. I was going to know how to do everything when I got to be thin. And, you know, all that happened when I got to be thin is that I was thinner. Because I got to be thin before I got programmed. I have the mind of an addict. And my mind, when it doesn't want to think about something painful, just goes on automatic pilot to something else. You know, and when I was eating, it would be hard candy or sugar or whatever I needed to chew. I chew with the same insane desperation that a gerbil runs on a wheel. And it would be instinctive. Or later I'd reach for a drink or a cigarette. Or I just don't want to think. And I mean, to this day, it'll be, oh God, I'm feeling, I need to play game of solitaire. You know, there's something going on. But in the days that I was putting stuff in my mouth when that feeling would take over me, that's the twisted mind of an addict. I know I'm not supposed to, and I absolutely have to have relief. And it would be, you know, anything. When I first came into the program, I had a food plan and a sponsor, but I didn't have the steps done yet. So anything, diet gum, mints, ice cubes, I needed to chew. My pens these days are beautiful, but they were a wreck before. The bow things on my glasses always were just like teeth marks. My nails were chewed. I chewed. If I was upset, I had to chew. I mean, it's a little scary. You know, the squirrel out in the backyard chews the edge of the feeder that we have out there for him, and I thought, that's me. Mm-hmm. And that's why I don't have a normal relationship with food. What happened? I think it's a God thing, and I call it a God thing if I can't explain it. What happened is that I did lose the weight. We were in graduate school. We were poor. We parked the car. We could barely afford gas. I started walking. I got a nutrition kind of plan. And diets work. All diets work if followed. And for whatever reason, I prayed that year to just, like, stop with a plate of food. And I could. And we didn't really have the cash to go out and supply ourselves with booze and drugs and a lot of crappy food. So through divine, you know, dumb luck, I ended up losing the last 45 pounds through dieting, gaining. I had lost, you know, a total of 80. So I had lost, like, you know, 35 pounds. And I was 28, 29 years old. And I lost that last weight. And I didn't get blonde hair. And I didn't get brown eyes. And I wasn't Sky King's niece, Penny. I didn't have a boyfriend with a horse and an airplane. You know, none of those things I'd grown up. I didn't know how to be a cheerleader. I didn't dare drive the Beltway in Washington, D.C. Nothing that I thought thin people did automatically could I do. And it really frightened me. And that's when I realized something was wrong here, because I've got my heart's desire. And my whole belief system has come crashing down that thin is not well. And I'd played my last card. And so I started looking around, and I remember I saw a doctor. He thought I was crazy, because why would I talk about having a weight problem when I'm thin? And I called one of the weight programs, and why would I need them, you know? And so I did what we do. I started gaining weight. I turn it back into the problem I do know something about. If I put weight on, I don't think I ever thought that. That's subconscious. Put the weight back on, then I got a problem that's right in front of me to deal with. I know how to do that. I'll diet. I don't have to deal with the rest. Anyway, long story short, as a pick-me-up, I went to get my hair cut. Why that day? Why that salon? Why that stylist? It was just a walk-in thing. And this woman said, you have beautiful hair. And I told her everything I just told you. God bless hairstylists. I mean, they are just our gift. And she said, you know, I go to this group. She couldn't talk about it there. It was at work. But she said, here's my card. She gave me her professional card, and she said, call. Call me. I'll tell you about it. So I called her eventually and she told me about it. And it was called Overeaters Anonymous. And for whatever reason, through purely dumb luck or divine coincidence, call it what you want, I heard about Overeaters Anonymous. And I eventually showed up at a meeting. And they said what I said. I'm a compulsive overeater and I can't do this by myself. And no human power probably could. And God could and would if he were sought. And I was led to OA rather than sought it out. And so one of the other things I've come to believe in is if I was lucky enough to get tapped, then I have a responsibility to do it and to stay. Today's reading, abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. That's the other thing. Without exception. I've lost parents. I've lost friends. I've lost animals. I didn't lose my marriage. He's a wonderful guy. And I had a lot of weird boyfriends in between, but I think God was keeping me single and occupied until Mr. Wright showed up. You see, so never doubt God's plan, or if you do, at least follow it anyway, is my recommendation. There's no getting away with anything in this program. It's between me and me and God, and you all help me, but there's no getting away with. There's no getting away with. And one day at a time, I'm here to say that it works. Now, most of my years in this program at this point have been spent abstinently. My abstinent date is November 13th, 1977. Mm-hmm. I am so grateful for that, and I am awed by it. And today's reading, which was wonderful, if you read any of the little daily books, was, we shall sooner have the fowl by hatching the egg than by smashing it. And I'm just going to end with a little story, and I hope I do it in my time. But when my child was 2 1/2, we had this little nursery school thing at our church, 2 mornings a week. And Miss Susie and Miss Nancy one year got the eggs in the incubator thing. Yeah, they all do it, right? And so these little kids see all this set up. And like the next time they come running in, where are the chicks? We're going to have chicks. We're going to have chicks. Where are the chicks? You know, you see where this is going. Every day they wanted to see chicks. And that's how I was when I dieted. I got the book. Why am I not thin? You know, there's a gestation period. And there's a gestation period in this program. And to my family, it looked like nothing was going on. And to my sponsor, it probably looked like nothing was going on. Until one day, you know, there's a little crack. And you start getting it. And the day I started getting it was November 13th, 1977. I had been the chick inside the shell, whacking my head against what seemed like a brick wall. For 1.5 years, absorbing everything you said, reading everything you said. I don't recommend taking that long to do, you know, to get it. But if it seems like it's taking that long, don't stop coming. Because everybody gets it. It says in our, is it page 20? What is it? The page in our OA book. It says, we cannot fail to recover. Once we've taken the third step. In the AA book, it says those who do not make it are those constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. Most of us are not that person. We with the help of others. So if you're banging your head against a brick wall, just keep banging. And if you're that person's sponsor, you know, keep the egg warm with faith and hope that that chick's going to come out. Because we do. And when the chick comes out, new chicks are pretty tough looking, you know? We're scrawny and we're fat in our case, either one. And you know, we got bad hair and we don't know how to peck and feed ourselves yet. And we don't know how to do a lot of things, which we learn here. One day at a time. And no matter what, put down the fork, get a food plan, get an eating plan, which is different. And it's the holidays. Have an escape plan. Please have an escape plan before you go into any place. Know how you're going to get out of there abstinently. Because that is, that, I lost the privilege of having fun at parties, at food parties, whoopee parties, they say in the big book. I lost the privilege to demand or expect that I deserve to have fun around parties that are full of stuff I'm addicted to. Usually I do, but if I don't, that's okay. If my motive is right for being there and I come out of there abstinently, I've had a great night. Because that's who I am and that's who I'll always be. And I can be an eating compulsive overeater, I can be an abstinent compulsive overeater, but I don't get to not be a compulsive overeater. And I choose... It's way more fun to be an abstinent and compulsive overeater. Put it that way. That's it. Time's up. Mm.